Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Ecclesia Leadership Podcast, episode number 8. With me is the esteemed Mr. Reverend Todd Heastand.
Greetings.
How you doing, Todd?
Well, how are you, John?
Good. Coming to us from Feasterville, Pennsylvania.
The one and only.
Google map it. But, Todd aside, our special guest today is J.R. Woodward. How you doing, J.R.?
Hey, doing well, man.
JR is coming to us from West Hollywood, California today.
East Hollywood.
You're right, East Hollywood. JR has long been a member of the Ecclesia Network, longer than just about anyone, since he was kind of one of the founding members, and also has a new book. So we're excited to talk about all of that today. So JR, let's start out. Let's just... for those who might not know you or be as familiar with you, why don't you tell us a little bit of your background, particularly ministry-wise, what you've been up to in L.A. and how your ministry has shaped some of the things that you've been writing about that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Well, actually, after kind of coming to faith in college, like my first church plant was at Virginia Tech, and that was pretty formative for me. About 12 years later, we moved out, a couple dozen people moved out with me to L.A. And, yeah, we've been planting neighborhood churches, ideally, you know, like 150, 200 people that really find ways to, ask the question, you know, if God's reign were to be fully realized in this neighborhood, what would be different? And that being the mission of the church. We've been out here. We have a church in Hollywood here. East Hollywood, Westwood, and just recently the Antelope Valley.
Nice. And so throughout the process, well, you've been the dream awakener, the apostle, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of this with the book, but describe what your role in particular has been in starting that first community and then in the other neighborhood communities.
Yeah. I think... the heart of what we do is kind of multiply mid-sized groups, and so I think that's a big part. When we started off here, I guess because we had a couple dozen people, the question was to start them all in one place or in a couple places, and we decided to kind of have people live in different neighborhoods so that as the church kind of grew, in a sense that next neighborhood church could start off much more contextual and we wouldn't have to kind of just move people
right
in 3 or 4 years. So I think that first couple of years was, you know, it was fairly complex because it was like you're trying to understand three areas. And for me, I think a big part of it was, you know, not only kind of coaching what was happening, doing weekly gatherings, but on top of that, getting involved in helping our neighborhood council get established here in East Hollywood, becoming an elected member of that. And that really put me in touch with kind of the particular problems and issues that our neighborhood faces in a very, you know, fascinating way. So
I'm chuckling because you are so animated, as always, that I can hear your computer wobbling on your table all the way through my... It's classic JR. So,
yes, classic.
Nice. And so you have... we'll spend most time with the book. So before we get to the book, let's talk a little bit about Ecclesia Network and your role and how that came together and how that formed and what it's looked like for Kairos to be a part of Ecclesia.
Yeah. you know, we all have our different memories of how things developed. But essentially, there was when I was on the East Coast, a bunch of us would meet together pretty regularly. Even that's kind of where I first met Todd.
Right.
But before I came out to LA, we kind of had these kind of gatherings, maybe 30, 40 pastors. I think it started to grow a bit more. And it just so happens, like, I was part of a group called Great Commission Ministries. At that time, GCM, which we call it for short, was both kind of a mission agency as well as like a governance of churches, and they were kind of very much tied together. I was, you know, a part of that national leadership team for a while, and because of the president that was going to move on, there was some major changes that were taking place, and so we have the mission agency is pretty much more like a deacon ministry. The GCM churches, some of them really wanted to get back to just a campus-only focus. And as that was happening, I realized, you know, I'm not really on just a campus. I have a community too. But I could appreciate that desire to have that focus. So I said, you guys should kind of fall with that. It was at that time that Backer was doing his doctor of ministry issue of post-denominational networks. And so he's kind of like, hey, do you want, you know, it ended up being like a good time to be part of starting a new network. I was kind of totally in a place where our churches wasn't going to have the same type of connection that we had before. And so there was, I think, about six or seven of us, Todd included, where, we all kind of became founding churches of the network. And I've always kind of been like one day on staff with Ecclesia, and a big part, you know, so there's a lot of things doing all together, but a big part is kind of working on the West Coast. And it's been neat to see what's developed. Obviously, John, you're a part of things on the West Coast. For us, is anything west of the
Yes.
Us at the start, now there's Austin and Portland and Boise, Idaho, and Denver. And, you know, there's other places that are kind of looking into things right now. So we need to see a bit of development on the West.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I know that when we first came on board, we kind of just sat in the middle, you know, between the East and the West. And so our first regional gathering was a convenient, what, probably 16 to 20 hour drive away. So we flew.
Nice.
Todd, is there any corrections that you want to make to how Ecclesia formed?
No, I mean, the only thing I'd say is I wouldn't. I mean, when I tell the story, JR has been a significant part of the formation of who Ecclesia is today, and so I think the kind of the entrepreneurial spirit that you bring, JR, has been significant in the growth of the network. And so, it's been a fun journey, and it's great to see how it's developed, and you know. You kind of throw everybody in the mix, and it's been a fun journey. So, I have nothing really to add other than, JR, I want to affirm you, make you feel good.
The nice thing about this network is like it's been, you know, and we talked about being a relational network, but that's what it's been.
Yeah,
it's not. I think the beautiful thing, part of the sad thing of my last space is. As there was shuffling around of roles and positions, I kind of had a distasteful sense of power grabbing to a little bit. That was a surprise for me.
In your previous experiences?
And this one hasn't been that at all.
Right. Right.
I haven't felt that one bit. There's something nice just about being able to kind of be in that sweet spot with other people. And I feel like the network has been that way. Since its origin, really. So,
and now I know. Now you've been part of some of the conversations around this new formation of Missio Alliance that Ecclesia is kind of partnering with.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that's forming to be?
Yeah, you know that kind of came off of a Ecclesia board meeting. There, as we were talking one time, what are some of the needs that we see out there? And as we were kind of even looking at what's our next gathering, Ecclesia gathering, look like. And I think Fitch, David Fitch in particular, and then the rest of us as well, but like really saw the need for a stronger theological voice that's like has both strong theology and practicality to it than kind of what we were sensing out there as far as. I guess you could say the tributaries or the streams that were kind of flowing into the bigger river. I think you have on one end of things like the Gospel Coalition, which, you know, are doing some fine things, but they also have some very focused beliefs and understandings, and then you have the emerging world. That voice seems to have died a little bit, in my opinion, but I think has a history of asking really good questions, and then in time, there's a lot of different answers that people have come up with. But they're like this, I don't know the best word to call it, but like maybe this radical middle where you're actually kind of nuancing a lot of the current issues in a way that isn't so black and white or dogmatic one way or the other. I feel like that there needs to be some voices. There are voices out there, but it's like collecting these voices together. And so we're planning the first kind of national inaugural first thing for Missio Alliance in April 11th through the 13th. It's going to be in Alexandria, Virginia. It's going to be at a African American church, which I think a lot of movements lately have been.
Say that again. That broke up.
Sorry. I have a few ambulances and stuff running outside. But
yes, so we hear.
It's going to be a traditional African American church, and one of the things I'm excited about. I'm in charge of kind of the people who are coming and thus the kind of the content and the flow of that, and I'm working with J.R. Roscoe and others. It's just not an independent type of thing, but one of my passions, and I think passions is to. For this, the beginning of this to be very multi-ethnic and gender inclusive, and at least in our first invites, at least a third of the people are non-white male. You know, nothing against white males. I'm happy to be one myself.
Right.
I just feel like America has changed. We need to kind of reflect the type of diversity that our context is in if we're going to kind of hope to really see God's kingdom fully realized here to the degree that will happen on this side of the heavens and the earth. So I'm excited. We have people like Dallas Willard, Joe Saxton, Cherith Fee Nordling, Amos Young, Alan and Deb Hirsch. The list goes on of both people that you would know, but also we're going to have people that not everybody would know, but that are doing such excellent work on the ground that they need to be heard from. So
yeah, for sure. Nice. Well, thanks. Let's talk a little bit about your book, and let me give a little bit of my own experience with your book, and maybe Todd can too, just so we set you up so it doesn't sound like you're just pumping up your own book, but. I was thankful to have an early revision to read probably about this time last year. And then the final copy that came out, I guess it's come out about a month ago or earlier this month, maybe.
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago.
And I have, the book is Creating a Missional Culture. We should say that. But I've kind of stopped trying to keep up with all of the popular level church leadership books that have been written of late, even in the missional stream, just because there's a lot of them, but also because in a lot of ways I felt like they were saying a lot of the same things, which was mostly good with a few nuances within that was unique that you'd have to try to pick out of each. And I know that I'm biased because I know that you and I go back several years and we're friends and I treasure your friendship, but I've really enjoyed reading your book because I feel like it's offering... a unique take on things. Like as I read your stuff, I'm familiar with some of it just from conversations with you and reading your blog, of course, but overall in the scope of the, missional church leadership books and all that have come out here in the last few years, I really feel like yours has offered a unique voice to that conversation. So it's been really helpful to read. I've got a copy here that I'm going to meet a friend for lunch and I'm going to give to him because it's just a book I think is going to be helpful for other people to read. So that's been my experience with it. So Todd, do you have any, before we move on to JR talking some about it, do you have any other thoughts from your experience with the book?
Yeah, I mean, I probably what's been the most helpful for me, and I think obviously I'm going to say the whole thing's pretty helpful, but I read an early manuscript, I think, Jer. And
well, I read an earlier manuscript than you did.
I read a manuscript before. It was cool to read the manuscript. But perhaps the most helpful thing, my church context is very much like yours, Jer, where we're trying to live in this co-leadership, you know, polycentric leadership world in our own congregation, and especially living in the Ephesians 4 model, you know, apostles, pastors, prophets, evangelists, teachers, shepherds, and stuff. Trying to help as myself kind of discover, I fall in the apostolic category pretty heavily, and trying to help myself discover what does that look like. There's not a lot out there when it comes to apostolic leadership and ministry. Alan's new book has been really helpful with that. But like, even for people who are prophets and shepherds and evangelists, the part three where it's the five culture creators has been a really good, like, I've given this book out to almost all my leadership team now and be like, read the whole book, but especially read, you know, chapter 3 or chapter 12 where it talks about prophets, because you're a prophet, and just read this. It's going to be really helpful. It's just really helpful to kind of give people an outside understanding of like what the heck is a prophet? What does it do? And how do I function? So yeah, it's just a practically good book. That's kind of my same experience as like yours, John. Like, I'm not really trying to keep up with the stuff, but this is helpful in a different kind of way than most of the other ones that have been coming out. So yeah, that's kind of my two cents on it. I think that the part three where it kind of labels the five equippers has been really, really helpful. So
yeah,
and you know, we're East Coast, so we can't use your cool names, or else people will beat us up. But you know, it's anyways.
Church up in Sacramento that I'm going to be going to speak at soon, but like the guy. Kind of, he's been preaching through like the five equippers at his congregation.
Okay.
He's very, it is funny, like, being California, he's very excited about those nicknames I give him. So he actually developed a free assessment that I put on my blog recently, which is cool. And it's you can do it on your phone, your smartphone, you can do it on the computer. It's He's a tech guy, so he's pretty good on that side. It's a pretty good thing. I took it myself. I would say, like, it had me evangelist, apostle, and I'm probably the, you know, turnaround. So I think there's some things I want to talk. We're gonna meet up and talk with, and maybe tweak it slightly. But overall, it's a great thing. So I have it posted on my website, Equipper Assessment. It's free. And it's a good way to kind of get started and things. So
your new website looks fantastic, by the way.
If only you would have hired someone else to design it, Jer.
Well, Jer, so all that being said, tell us a little bit about your motivations to, like, what was it that you felt like you needed to offer the greater conversation of the missional church or the North American church overall, maybe the worldwide church for that matter, I don't know. That you just felt like was burning, that was developing in your mind, that you wanted to bring to it?
Yeah, I think really like three or four things. Partly the reason the book came about, and I was glad, is like I met with this guy, Rick Mice, who's been at one point, he's not right now, but like the Southwest coordinator for his denomination. Like 80 churches in Southern California. And I was talking with him, sharing a lot of the things that I share in the book with him. And he's the one who really asked me to write. First, he kind of hired me to write just some unpublished stuff for his pastors and so forth there. So I started to realize that this, besides the five equippers, is something I've been thinking about for the last 12 years with my friend Pavi Thomas, really before there was any books on it at all. Kind of getting a sense of what these five type of people look like, and seeing that happen in our local context here. I think the other passion is the whole idea of polycentric leadership. So if you take a church structure, I first kind of hold to having a very pretty decentralized approach to things. But at the you could say the visionary leadership, that being polycentric versus just kind of one lead pastor. This is different than a flat element. So, like, I think a lot of times people don't understand what I mean by polycentric leadership. They just assume that it's flat. That means, like, there's a whole team always doing everything together. But maybe think of a jazz band where you have four or five people and the lead instrument, like, revolves. And when they're in the groove of things, it just kind of revolves and there's hardly even conversation that has to take place. I mean, there isn't. They just kind of – they do it. And in the same way, maybe, we've all heard about the geese flying in a V. And you have, like, that point geese that takes a lot of the wind, but they rotate. That position. So what you have in polycentric leadership is you still value leadership. But it's just like leaders sometimes are followers and sometimes they're leaders. And I think that's important for today because I think most people common understanding would be that it's good followers make good leaders. Yet oftentimes we've set up our structures in the church where the top leaders, the lead pastor or senior pastor model, where that person essentially is never a follower anymore. Hardly for anything,
right?
Oh. And I think that kind of creates issues when it relates to the issues of power and so forth. And so I think, and besides that, like, I mean, you talk to a lot of people. It's just overwhelming for one person to have to feel like they own this vision, you know, in a sense alone, and nobody owns it with them to the same degree that they do. I feel like this polycentric leadership, especially. When you put in the five equippers of the, like we've been talking about with apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor, teacher, each of them kind of come with their own perspectives. And I think are able to have a more holistic approach to the spiritual formation of the congregation. So I would say polycentric leadership is a huge passion. And I feel like that's not a huge, there's not a lot of people talking about that.
Right.
And really how does that work its way out? And I don't get into, prescribing what that should look like, but I do try to describe what it could look like to some degree. Mm-hmm. I think if there's any more writing that needs to take place is like more people kind of explaining what they're doing as it relates to this genuinely shared leadership, what they're doing, and just having different pictures so that people know, like, it doesn't have to be this or this, but, like, you know, what does it mean to be a community of leaders within the community, equipping the community? I would say the other big passion is And it kind of the title, creating a missional culture, is the whole idea of the power of culture in shaping us as individuals. We live, obviously, in a very individualistic society. I mean, there's good parts of that. You know, we tend to be more entrepreneurial, risk-taking, so forth. But I think we're weak on the communal aspect. And I think we also just fail to realize how much even the culture of the congregation shapes us. So we shape the culture of the congregation, and then reshapes us. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a missing, it's been something, it hasn't been prevalent in the way that we approach spiritual formation and talk. So I feel like part of the passion is pushing that into the conversation and also kind of realizing, you know, what does it mean to be cultural architects or cultural creators? What are the different elements that create culture? And I have a real passion for that. I still have a lot of learning to do in that, but, like, it's been a fascinating study, even looking at it from an anthropological point of view, which is really something that's only been around for the last 100 years as far as the study of it.
Right.
Identifying different aspects of it.
Nice. What kind of – well, let me ask this question. I know that some perceive that the fivefold gifting that comes from, or we're talking about it as if people know, but it's the fivefold gifting from Ephesians.
Four.
Is it four? I was going to say five.
Yeah.
But the apostles.
It's five, but it's Ephesians four.
Right. So the apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherd/pastor and teacher. I know that there's some who hold a perspective that those are unique roles that are just given to leaders within the church. You certainly write from a perspective of everyone has, you know, especially as they mature, has leanings towards each of these. So talk a little bit about why you see that being the case, as opposed to somebody who just might say those are specific roles that only a few people have.
Yeah. Well, I think a couple things. Number one, evangelists, you know, we're all called to kind of share our, you know, all to Timothy, you know, be an evangelist, you know, fulfill your calling. Now, I don't know that that was his gift. Otherwise, Paul probably wouldn't have to admonish him to be an evangelist. All this to say, like, whether you look at a teacher, we're all to teach one another. When you look at the pastor, we're to care for each other, encourage each other. We're to do the pastoral type of things with one another. We're to challenge each other like a prophet might challenge us. So you can look at each of these. We're kind of to live. We're sent people. That's what an apostle is.
Right.
So you could say, and I think even the text itself, if you look at verse 7, there's a sense that these are all different callings. And so I think Hirsch develops this probably better than anybody in his book, Permanent Revolution, him and Tim, there's really a three-dimensional reading of Ephesians 4. There's the sense of calling, there's the sense of ministry, and then there's a sense of probably predominantly about is equipping in more of a leadership type of role. So the book kind of focuses more on that, but I think you do have the calling, the ministry, A, B, gifted, and let's say the gift of administration, mercy, and helps. That maybe that's some other elements of gift. And I think they're going to, in a ministry way, use it either in a pastoral way, or the inside of the congregation,
in some fashion. Say that again. You broke up a little there.
You have like the five gifts, but like when it comes to the ministry part, let's say someone has the gift of administration and help.
It's breaking up again. Hey, Todd, hit mute on your mic. Let's see if that helps too.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah, try saying that one more time.
So, you know, when it comes to the... looking at these gifts from a ministry standpoint, let's say you have someone with the gift of administration and mercy. They could use that those gifts in a pastoral way, kind of ministering to the needs of the congregation. They could use it more in an outward way, like in an evangelistic way. And so I think there's the calling, there's the ministry, and then there's the equipper, you know, in a sense like it's a continuum of player and coach. I think we all kind of are called to live out these gifts, but some of them are particular callings that we sense and feel and identify with and have passion toward. And as we live out those callings, we find our passion flows into one of these ministry areas. And as we start ministering in that area, I think in time we potentially can become equipper. Not everybody is an equipper. But not everybody's designed to be a coach or even desires to be a coach. But at some point, you become a person who equips the rest of the congregation so that they're fully using their gifts for the building up of the body, and so we reach the full stature of Christ.
So you'd say that everyone might have a bent towards, you know, a prominent and a secondary of these, but might not necessarily develop to a primary equipper role in the church with it?
Yeah, I think yeah. So.
And the other book you mentioned, I'll just say it again because you kind of cut out right on the first word of it, was Permanent Revolution, Alan Hirsch and Tim Ketchum.
Yep.
And you feel like that complements pretty well a lot of what you've written?
Yeah. I'm kind of making my way through the book, but at the beginning, when they talk about the three-dimensional reading of Ephesians 4, I think they do that well.
Nice.
And yeah, that is a very big compliment to the book. Obviously, Hirsch kind of wrote my foreword. I remember the first time I met Hirsch and we started talking about the Equippers, it was just so refreshing to kind of connect with someone who had, you know, so deeply thought about these things in the way I had been thinking about it in the last number of years. So the conversation was just much richer. It's not like a accident that his book came out this year. This book's coming out. I feel like Breen has a book out that kind of touches on some things, and his Building a Discipleship Culture, at least, is on ebook. There's starting to be kind of a lot of talk and a lot more people thinking deeply about this.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of response are you getting to the book overall?
From the reviews and from some of the Twitter action, it's been great. Like people have really Found it helpful. I was just looking at a tweet the other day. Someone took a picture of the book and they go, "I'm having the temptation of wanting to highlight the whole book." It's like, so it was. It's kind of cool to hear things like that. So far it's been very positive. I'm kind of I think in time it'll be interesting to see as the book kind of gets out in more hands, how it kind of hits the traditional hierarchical church pastor. I know I've had some conversations with people maybe who kind of consider themselves lead pastor. A lot of those have been good because people have felt like, I'm kind of with you on this polycentric leadership, but like, what if I'm in this very hierarchical level church? Like, how do we move from, what we are to that? And I think that to me is promising because I think they're getting it. But I think it also hits something I don't address in the book, and that is like how we approach change when we feel like we want to make that change. We feel either convicted or, convinced that this is where we need to go. I think because you can want to change to do something good, but in the process of how you do the change, it could be bad. So I think it's real important that anybody who's grabbing a hold of this and maybe are wanting to kind of shift the way that they're being the church, that they do so in a very wise way. I just did an interview with what's the name of that book? They do a lot of book reviews and
Inglewood.
Yeah, with Inglewood in their next print magazine, they're going to have a pretty long interview with me where I give some really good help on how do you kind of make this shift and this change. I could talk a little bit now, but like feel they want to move in that direction.
Yeah. Well, I think. Say that, Ted?
I was going to say, Jared, one of the questions I was going to ask you was how, like, most people I've talked to have been kind of the more, kind of in the missional stream who've read the book and have kind of really been enjoying it. But I was actually curious how the larger church, more established congregations, kind of denominational type entities, I was thinking it would be really good, especially the first part on culture. And I just was wondering how that had been received, yeah. But it was pretty good.
Interesting is like one of the first reviews I had of the book was from I don't know if he's a bishop, he's definitely a priest, but he's a coaches with the Anglican Church up in Canada in Toronto. He loved it. He said this was his first book that he read that really endeared him to the five equippers. Huh. I might have read some things, but so there's something about the way it was approached that endeared him. That's going to actually shape and affect his hiring and stuff like that. One of my upcoming talks I'm going to be doing is in Knoxville, Tennessee, and it's Episcopalian church, and they're absolutely loving it. I think they ordered 50 books, handed them out to a number of people, like at least a lot of their leaders in the congregation, and I've heard from the rector. And I mean, they're like overwhelmingly excited about me coming and speaking on the themes of the book. And so I've actually been quite blown away by some established.
Yeah.
I can't get much more established in an Episcopal church when it comes to Protestantism, and to see their response to it. I think one of the reasons is, as you know, like in my understanding of culture, like one of the factors is institution. So a lot of times when I look at in missional books and readings, there's kind of an anti-institutional kind of aspect to it. And I think like when you if you adopt kind of Miroslav Volf's definition of institution that he borrows from other sociologists and anthropologists, where it's two or three people gathered doing the same thing over a period of time. So, I mean, if you look at it from that angle, like institutions is something we're going to have with us. The problem is institutionalism versus institution. And institution kind of creates a sense of stability. And I think we need stability in our world today. A lot of people that I know need a sense of stability. And so, I think that's maybe another reason. I'm just kind of guessing why so far it's had a really good reading with some traditional mainline denominations and churches.
Well, let me ask you one more.
Sorry. I just tell JR when you're out in Philly in October for our little gathering we're having. I'm hoping to invite in a bunch of mainliners who I've been connected to recently. So it should be a fun conversation. But go ahead, John.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you one more book-related question, and then we'll start working towards wrapping up. I know that anytime I've not written, however, six figures of words in one setting like you have here, but I know that pretty much any time I've written something much, much shorter, or even every time I preach when I'm done afterwards, I go, oh, why didn't I say that? Or why didn't I say that differently? Now that the book is out, you know, it's finalized and it's in the hands of others, what would you addendum? What would you add that you feel like you left out or say different?
Well, I actually, the draft was about 90,000 words. What you have here is probably about 70,000. So actually, we've already cut out a lot of what I would put in. And beyond that, I think the thing that I overlooked or didn't really put in there is I think a good chapter on how to approach if you kind of buy into this idea of polycentric leadership and the five equippers, and that's not the way things are rolling in your congregation, how do you kind of go about change? I think that's pretty important. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even if I wanted to address it, I didn't have any space to address it. But I think that is really, really vital. Because I think it would be sad for me if people started implementing this in a wrong way and then kind of maybe it'd be potentially blaming this approach or something versus the way that they implemented change. Yeah. And so I would say get some good resources on how to implement change, and because when you're implementing change that affects everybody to a pretty big degree, I think you have to do it in smaller areas first and do it incrementally, and then before you kind of adopt something as a whole. It's not much different than a lot of what different organizations do when they're testing out something new. You test it out in smaller areas, and then you kind of see it multiply and grow and develop, and then in time you can adopt it as a whole. So that would probably be my biggest the biggest chapter I would add on.
Do you think some of that writing will see the light of day in articles or on your blog or anything like that?
Like I said, this one interview coming up, it'll be on there. I'm gonna probably let them, since it's on the interview, let the print edition go first before I kind of start blogging about it. But yeah, I'll blog about it. One of the things I have too that is going to be helpful on the website is kind of common questions. And I haven't started that section, but I'm trying to write down the questions that I hear most frequently and address those. And this will definitely be one of them that I address there, along with many others. So,
gotcha.
So that's the nice thing about having a web and a blog is I can right. kind of add that I didn't get to put in the book, but yeah, good question.
You can have the eternal appendix. Well, JR, I know that we'll wrap this up here, but I'd love to hear you have fully embraced the idea of, you know, that you fit as the apostle evangelist, and so in a lot of ways it seems like you've been winding down your work in LA, kind of handing that off as your role is done. So tell us a little bit about what's next, what dreams are next to be awakened.
Yeah. So, you know, as a church planner, I'm always kind of constantly working myself out of a job, and I've done that here in LA I've been in a coaching role for the last couple of years. But I was praying through what to do. I just took a sabbatical, besides the writing project, then I had a resting time, and I think was able to kind of refresh myself and see, okay, what is the next ministry? What's the next season of ministry call? One of the things I was thinking about was going up to San Francisco to plant a church. And while I was there, just to kind of try to make it pretty short, is I had a couple of conversations. I actually met with about a dozen church leaders, from the largest church to the smallest church, people who've been there 3 years to 30 years. And there's two conversations that stood out. One was with a church strategist in the area, and she asked me, so JR, what is it that you feel like you cannot not do? And I don't know if it was just the Linda Burquist is her name, but she, I don't know if it was the double negative that made me stop and think a little bit more. But my answer to her was, well, number one is I want to really help churches live out the things I'm writing about. I want to see more models of this, if you will, different expressions of this. Two was I wanted to pursue a PhD where I studied the, in particular, I want to study where does authority come from, and then how do we view power as it relates to structure and the powers that be, if you will. And then the third thing I said is I want to continue to serve the Ecclesia Network in whatever fashion. What's interesting is like what I didn't say was like I feel like I need to plant another church. This is very unusual for me as a person who self-identifies as a church planner. Second conversation that was shaping, and then I'll get to what I'm doing, was a guy named Barry Brown. Barry Brown has been in San Francisco like 30 years. He's had a significant impact in the city and continues to have one. In fact, he met early on when Dallas Willard wrote one of his early books, The Spirit of the Disciplines, way back then when he was writing the Celebration of the Disciplines. He connected with Dallas, and Dallas said, hey, I know this kind of works for my life. Can you see if this will work for your congregation? So this guy has been in the spiritual formation for quite a long time. And I could tell its impact on his own life because when we met, for literally an hour, he just asks me questions. And then after about an hour of listening does he kind of give some thoughts and advice. And what he kind of pulled out of me and so forth and shaped kind of what his advice was. But he basically said, JR, it's like, it would be great if you come up here to San Francisco. If God leads you to start a church here, you know, we certainly could use that. But he goes, I noticed when you were talking that when you mentioned the Ecclesia Network that your face just kind of lit up, you know. And he goes, I wonder if you should consider doing something a little bit outside of the box. And he said, like, for example, maybe you can consider kind of in the next 10 years instead of coming to plant one church in San Francisco, maybe you can help 3 to 5 churches in the Ecclesia Network, kind of join with a church that's maybe, you know, just starting up a year or two old and kind of help them implement some of the things you're talking about, if that's what they want to do, and help them grow and develop. And then, you know, kind of leave them, write letters, introduce them to your friends in a sense of like a Pauline type of ministry. He says that, then he shares this story about St. Francis. I guess St. Francis one time was trying to discern what his will is, what God's will for his life was, and he didn't know if he should be a preacher that stays in one place, an itinerant preacher or something else. And so he goes to his trusted friends and basically asks them to discern on his behalf what his future was. And they pray, they come back, and they say, we think you should be an itinerant preacher. And he says, thanks be to God, and that's pretty much what he did with his life. Well, the conversation I had with Linda on what is it that you cannot not do, this other conversation and this story about St. Francis were just, I was just mulling over and really had a hard time letting go of any of that. And we were getting ready to have a national gathering with Ecclesia. So I kind of decided I was going to do something like St. Francis did, where I would gather a couple of my trusted friends, ask them to discern on my behalf what God would have me do. And so, I had people like Chris and Rachel Becker, Joe and Lisa Rasek, Jim Pace, David Fitch. I kind of put Fitch in the area because he's a contrarian thinker. I figured if we're on something, it must be from the will of God. It must be the will. And so I kind of prepped them all, said, you know, should I stay in L.A., plant churches, go to San Francisco, plant a church, or be what I call like itinerant equipper, where I would come in and be with a church for 2 or 3 years. Help them kind of get to whatever the next level of development and then move on. Long story short, when we prayed, we met together, they asked questions. It was unanimous that I should be this itinerant equipper. And so, Backard asked, maybe wait 3 months before you decide where that happens first. And so I had been entertaining a number of places, but just as of last week, called to start this kind of new venture of ministry in Miami, Florida, with Rhythm Miami Church, Keese, and the whole Aaron and Liz, and there's a whole number of equippers that they've started to develop. he's kind of read an early version of the book that you have, and it just struck him like it kind of expressed and articulated what he intuitively already felt. And so they've already kind of been enacting these things. And so I'm real excited about in January moving there and starting that. I just found out today, too, I got my official acceptance from the University of Manchester to start my PhD there with Cliff College. So essentially in this next season, I'm going to be 2 days a week will be working on PhD. 2 days a week will be local ministry with Rhythm Miami. And then 2 days a week will be ministry.
Nice.
Make sure you get this up fast so we can be sure to be the ones who broke the story. That's on right. JR. Going.
I don't know that it's public yet, so yeah.
Well, it's about to be. Or at least Todd's mom and my mom will know soon. And your mom.
So, own version of viral, man. That's how we go viral.
Well, we're kind of nearing what we try to shoot for time-wise. JR, where can our faithful listeners, including our moms, where can they find you online in the social world and the web world and all that?
Well, it might be a little hard. No, I guess I'm on Twitter at Dream Awakener. Blog site, really it's a website with all kinds of stuff that really, a lot of free stuff that helps kind of live into the things I'm talking about is jrwoodward.net. And then from jrwoodward.net, you can pretty much find any social links I have, because this guy named John Chandler did a nice job at, you know, designing my site, and they're right on top. You can just click in the blogosphere and the web.
Good. Well, and I did have fun working on your site. It made it easy because you had a really good looking book cover to kind of emulate, but I'm glad you're excited about it. So, all right, Todd, anything else you want to throw in?
Nothing else that I want to throw in.
All right. Well, hey, JR, thank you for your time. It's been great to have you. As always, it was like pulling teeth to get your opinion out. But we pulled it off.
Amazing.
Got you to speak up. And thank you for constraining yourself enough to not make the table wobble. But apologies to those who are listening. We did have a little bit of audio quality issues today, but I think for the most part, much of what was said was good stuff, and it'll be worth sticking through for that. So if you heard this, you obviously agree. Have a good day. JR, thanks a lot. Todd, good to see you.
Yeah.
See you.
Blessings.